NASA brings the Langley experience to a GA fly-in. The airlines will fight a new rule that favors union organizers. And Boeing lights the fires on the first GE-powered Dreamliner. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, May 14th, 2010. NASA said early this morning, there's a 70% chance of favorable weather this afternoon for the final launch before retirement of the space shuttle Atlantis. The go-ahead for loading of 500,000 gallons of liquid oxygen and hydrogen was given at 4:14 a.m. Eastern Time. Pardon me, would you mind putting out that cigarette? Thank you. Launch is scheduled for 2:20 p.m. Eastern Time this afternoon. NASA will offer visitors a unique souvenir at a weekend fly-in that starts today in North Carolina. Technicians from Langley will be part of a special NASA display at the Mid-Atlantic Fly-In and Sport Aviation Convention at the Lumberton Municipal Airport. Tom Mitchell, an alumnus of Robeson Community College in Lumberton, works on exploration and flight projects at Langley. He'll share some of his experiences with about 250 high school students this morning. Visitors will learn more about NASA's contributions to aviation, see items used in research at NASA Langley, and discover how scientists hope to fly a rocket-powered airplane over the surface of Mars. They'll also meet a robotic astronaut assistant named Robonaut and get a free postcard from space memento. The National Mediation Board ruled late last week that it would approve a rules change that could lower the bar for labor groups to organize. The new rule would allow a union to win representation rights if a simple majority of those voting approve. Previously, the vote had to be a majority of the entire workforce, whether they voted or not. Unions are in favor of the change, but the Air Transport Association of America says it will file a legal challenge. Quote, "We continue to believe the National Mediation Board does not have legal authority to implement this rule, one that undoubtedly will lead to more labor discord. It is quite clear to us that the NMB was determined to proceed despite the proposed rule's substantive and procedural flaws, leaving us no choice but to seek judicial review," unquote. The New York Times reports that the NMB voted 2-1 in favor of the change, with Bush appointee Elizabeth Doherty offering a vigorous dissent, saying the new rule is, quote, "an unprecedented departure for the National Mediation Board and represents the most dramatic policy shift in the history of the agency," unquote. The first General Electric Gen X engines on a Boeing 787 Dreamliner were fired up on Monday. Customers can choose between the Gen X engines and Rolls-Royce Trent 1000s when ordering their 787s. Scott Fancher, Boeing VP and head of the 787 program, commented, quote, "Our partners at GE have worked diligently to ensure their engines are ready for the testing that is going to occur both before the first flight of ZA-005 and throughout the flight test program," unquote. Following engine testing, ZA-005, which is the fifth 787 to be built, will undergo a series of ground tests similar to those conducted on the first 787s to ensure that it's ready for first flight later this quarter. Up next on ANN, the FAA revises a special bulletin covering Cessna Skymasters. The FAST team says meteorological towers are a growing hazard. And maintenance shops jump and wave about their economic contribution. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 14th. I'm Paul Plack. The FAA has published a revised Special Airworthiness Information Bulletin for Cessna models 336, 337, and F-337 series planes with wingtip extensions. The agency says the revision is a result of comments received from individuals and other airworthiness authorities and corrects a typographical error. The bulletin adds to the list of models potentially affected, It adds to the list of focused inspections. It's based on preliminary findings from a fatal accident involving a Cessna T-337G, in which a 6-foot section of the outboard right wing separated. The plane had been modified with an STC for extended wingtips and had an additional STC for winglets. The investigation revealed there have also been reports from the field of wrinkled skins, working rivets, cracks, and loose wingtips. The FAA recommends a number of specific inspection items on the wings to be done in the next 100 hours, and the bulletin adds a warning to pay attention to the part of the STC which warns against multiple STC mods to the same aircraft, unless, quote, it is determined that the interrelationship between this change and any of those other previously approved modifications will introduce no adverse effect upon the airworthiness of that aircraft, unquote. An airworthiness directive has been deemed unnecessary at this time. Get more details in the text version of this story, dated May 12th, at aero-news.net. The FAA safety team has published an advisory about the hazards of meteorological towers, or METs, that are often erected quickly and can be in place for months or years. The towers are put up to help gather meteorological information before the construction of a wind farm or other alternative energy project. Any tower less than 200 feet in height is not required by regulation to be lighted. At this time, there is no standardized notification system in place to indicate when and where these towers are erected. They don't make the AFD or require NOTAMs unless they interfere with airport operations. The general requirement to provide lighting on any tower over 200 feet results in most METs being intentionally built just under 200 feet tall. But the FAA says that even if the tower is under 200 AGL, it may still recommend marking or lighting due to a tower's location. An interagency memo issued by the Department of the Interior and the Forest Service on low-level flight operations warns that the wind towers themselves, once installed, may also be hard to see, despite most being painted white. In an attempt to highlight the contribution of aviation maintenance to economic recovery, ARSA, the Aeronautical Repair Station Association, has for the first time provided a snapshot of the industry's state-by-state footprint. The study was prepared by AeroStrategy, based on 2009 government and industry data, and pegs the U.S. civil aviation maintenance workforce at 274,634. The industry's direct and indirect impact on the U.S. economy is placed at $39 billion. There are 6 times more people working for repair stations than are employed by the airlines to perform maintenance work in-house. ARSA Executive VP Christian Klein observes, quote, maintenance may be the least visible segment of the aviation industry, but this study makes it clear that in addition to helping U.S. airlines become safer and more competitive, repair stations make significant economic contributions throughout the country, unquote. Still ahead, the first completely new commercial airport in the U.S. in 15 years is set to open. Philadelphia International will spend $5 billion on improvements. And has anyone seen poor Paco? Because Delta hasn't. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, May 14th. I'm Paul Platt. The new Northwest Florida Beaches International Airport is set to begin operations on Sunday, May 23rd. The FAA recently completed testing of the airport's 10,000-foot runway, ILS, nav system, lighting, and control tower. Air traffic controllers are currently undergoing training. Still to be received is final approval from TSA and a certificate of occupancy from the county for the 125,000-square-foot terminal building. 6 car rental companies have already agreed to lease space at the new airport. The FAA has issued the airport's Part 139 operating certificate, and Airport Authority Chairman Joe Tannehill responds, quote, We want to thank our partners at the FAA in helping us to ensure that the new airport meets all federal aviation safety requirements, unquote. The occasion will be the first time in 15 years that a commercial international airport built from scratch has opened in the U.S. Over the next decade and a half, Philadelphia International Airport expects to have $5.2 billion to spend on expansion projects, according to plans released to airport officials by the FAA. The FAA considered 29 options back in 2000. The plan it accepted lengthens two of the airport's four runways and builds a fifth along the Delaware River after moving the current UPS operation to the west end of the airport. The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that the FAA will release a final environmental impact statement this summer. The improvements are designed to ease congestion at Philly, which is the sixth most delayed airport in the nation. It will also expand the terminal complex by 30 gates to 150 and build an automated people mover between gates and eventually to the parking lots. The money will come from FAA grants, passenger facility charges, and city bonds. With all the luggage lost or damaged by airlines, it's a tough decision to trust them with the transportation of a pet. Josiah Allen and his girlfriend jumped through all the hoops, got all the required papers and shots for their Jack Russell Terrier mix, Paco, and put him in a secure carrier before handing him over to Delta Airlines. They last saw him on a five-hour layover in Mexico City before heading to Detroit. The blog, Dogster, writes that upon arrival, Delta told Allen that Paco had not made the flight, but was being cared for by Delta employees and would be delivered to Ontario, Canada, where Allen lives, the next day. When that didn't happen, Delta then reportedly told Allen the dog had escaped the day before. Allen says it would have been very difficult for Paco to escape from the carrier. He also wonders why he was told Paco was safe and sound if that was not the case. Delta has reimbursed Allen for the cost of Paco's transportation and offered to pay for the shots he got in Mexico. And finally, NASA-sponsored studies have found that omega-3 fatty acids found in fish oil may play a role in mitigating the bone breakdown that occurs during spaceflight and in osteoporosis. The solution could have significant implications for space travelers and those susceptible to bone loss on Earth. The study's results are published in the May issue of the Journal of Bone and Mineral Research. The paper reports on four types of studies using cell culture, ground-based bed rest, and data from both Space Shuttle and International Space Station crew members. NASA studies bone density loss because it's one of the main effects of exposure to the weightlessness of space. Omega-3s were found to inhibit the formation of nuclear factor kappa B, or NFKB, an immune system component related to the inflammation process, which can lead to bone and muscle loss. Activation of NFKB has been found to be increased in astronauts returning from short-term shuttle missions for up to 2 weeks after they returned to Earth's gravity. Researchers found that astronauts who ate more fish lost less bone mineral after 4 to 6 month space flights. Eating fish three times a week on a trip to Mars doesn't sound so bad. Putting up with the smell of cooking it three times a week in a space capsule sounds pretty awful. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Aspen Avionics CEO John Uzukai discusses what it takes to successfully adapt avionics to helicopters and Aspen's future in that segment. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.